Hey there.
Hi, Greg. How are you?
Good, Doug. How are you, mate? How's things?
Fantastic. Just thanks very much for talking to me today. Firstly, congratulations on Project Hail Mary. It's a pleasure to speak with you. You've created some of the most distinctive imagery in modern cinema. So I'd love to start off by asking, like, when you first read the script for Project Hail Mary, what did you think the film would look like in your head? Like, was there anything that you sort of envisioned straight off?
Well, no, actually, and this is the thing. Normally, you generally have an idea, but what you do is you wait to talk. Well, I do anyway. You wait to talk to the directors because what you don't want, I when I say you, what I don't want
Yep.
is I don't want to have a fully formed vision of a movie in my brain, speak to the director or directors in this case, and then for them to say something different, in which case you then have to unravel and unpack something. So for me, I think I've got a pretty well developed whatever that is in your brain that kind of can see images and see an idea as an image. You
Yep.
know, I've been doing it for long enough now, but what is really hard for me to do is to unpack it. So if I've seen something a certain way, it's very, very hard for me to see it a different
Oh yeah,
way.
fair call.
So, which is maybe a strength in the sense that, you know, if I have see it a certain way, then I fight and I do everything I need to do to get it to look like that. So, as opposed to, you know what I mean? So there is
Yeah.
probably a positive in that, but the negative in that is that if I fully form an idea in my brain before speaking to the directors, then I find it hard to lose that idea. So I read the script, realized that it was a great, you know, great buddy film, you know, saw the science in it, you know, but then talked to the directors. And then having them explain to me kind of how they saw the film and tonally led me down the path of then developing a visual kind of script that would be, you know, in keeping with their idea of a effectively a buddy film, right? That's what
Yeah.
they were making at its core. Like it was a, you know, like an 80s buddy film.
Yeah.
So
Bang on. Yeah.
that's how they saw it. That's how they saw it. And I was like, all right, we're making something with some heavy science. We don't want to be, you know, bogged down in the science of it all. We want to create light, but in doing so, there was a lot of things that were sort of fighting against that idea. Like, you know, Rocky doesn't see the way we see, so
No.
he doesn't see with eyes. He sees with like sonic,
Yeah,
sonic.
sonar sort of thing.
So exactly, sonar, exactly. So it was like, all right, well, Rocky's tunnel doesn't need light, so doesn't have light. So how do we get light? How do we see Rocky? Like, how do we see Rocky? And how do we create this idea at the very, very beginning that Rocky's a kind of a monster, which is
Yeah.
the, you know, the first thing he sees is this kind of like this kind of crazy kind of rock monster.
Yeah.
But then how do we soften Rocky to the point without too much light on him? Do you know what I mean? Like, so the
Yeah.
challenges were plentiful. And even just the whole, you know, first sort of act of Ryland, you know, by himself was a challenge because at some point you want to have some enjoyment as a viewer, even though this guy's not an enjoyable place. You know, you
No.
want to not have a too dark or too serious a ship set up, even though what he's going through is dark and serious and he's in the middle of nowhere. So my first thoughts when I read it were a little bit loose, as I said, but I soon kind of developed this kind of idea of this kind of analogness to the very, very hard digital elements of the science of the film.
Yeah, fair call. So when you say that you don't like to like put your own take on it till you've talked to the directors, when you're stepping into something like Rogue One slash Mandalorian, because the world's already created, did that make it a little bit easy for you, or was it a difficult thing because you need to keep everyone happy because it's already set per se?
Well, no, and that to go to those ones, that they're really fun because, again, going back to what I was saying about forming a visual kind of I image in my mind, the great thing about doing a project like those ones was that there was an image already in mind, and not only. Because in any case, let's say you read Hail Mary, right? You might see elements of 2001
Yep.
or Alien or, you know, like or space films like, you know, Apollo or Apollo 11, like, for example, films like that. You see flashes of those things,
Yeah.
but we're not making 2001, we're not making Alien, we're making a different entity. Whereas something like Rogue, we were making a Star Wars film, so not only could you lean into those references, we were kind of expected to, because you know, every fan wanted to sort of see what there's a certain visual language and shot language that occurs in Star Wars. And not only, as I said, not only could we lean into it, but we were expected to, really. We were expected of ourselves 100%. To lean into it. So so that was where it's interesting, because a lot of the time it's, you know, when you're picking references out to use as a visual idea, you're not trying to hide those references like nefariously, but you're trying not to, you know, we weren't making 2001. So you are trying to take elements of it, but you're trying to put your own spin on it. Whereas Rogue was like we didn't have to do the last part. We just had to inject how we saw a Star Wars world, which was fantastic.
Fair call. I'm with you. And I'll just say, while we're on the subject, thank you very much for that film. I've got the poster 1 meter from me on the wall.
Cool. Thank you.
So with Project Hail Mary, though, like, the story is experienced through Ryan's character pretty much the entire film.
Yeah.
Number one, he's in, every scene, pretty much.
How did
that shape the way you approach shooting it?
Well, it put a lot of pressure on Ryan, because
I bet
generally you have a number of actors and characters that you can go to. So if somebody is, you know, he also had a lot of training, because like to move through space, you know, there's a lot of wire work, and there's a lot of, you know, a lot of core kind of exercises one needs to do. And I'm not going to get into his training regime, but there's a lot of training that he needed to do for just that stuff.
For sure.
Let alone workshopping scenes with the directors or with the actor James Ortiz, who played Rocky and was the puppeteer. So there's a lot of preparatory work that he needed to do in addition to actually being on set with us. And so normally those things are done in off days and down days, and, you know, in the afternoon, maybe when you're not in a scene and there's another actor in a scene instead. And he was in every scene. So for him, it put a lot of pressure on him. And for us, it just meant that we needed to be, I mean, we just needed to just do what he was able to do at that point in time. So from a schedule perspective, if he hadn't trained enough to do a certain stunt, like, let's say, you know, a weightless gravity stunt where he's moving through the ship or something, then we might have not shot that on the day that we'd planned. We might have shot that a few days later, when he'd had that managed to train. So nothing serious or nothing bad. It's just we had to be very, very alert to what was feasible in the time that we had.
And I suppose everyone really had to be on their game in that sort of instance as well. Like, everyone just had to bring it, because obviously Ryan's in every scene. You've probably got time factors and everything as well.
Always. Yeah. Exactly right. Exactly. Because, I mean, everyone wants to obviously do their best, and everybody has to be properly prepared. So, you know, this is why, you know, we'd be pre-lighting sets on the weekend, so that when we came in on a Monday, we had every box ticked or every eventuality kind of covered, so that we had the ability to move from, you know, that part of the lab to this part of the lab, or you know, from the med bay up to the, you know, the data corridor. Like, we had those things kind of ready to go if we needed to sort of pivot and make a change.
So was there a particular scene that was especially challenging for you to figure out visually?
Well, I'll tell you the biggest visual challenge is that every set, for the most part, occurs in two states. It occurs horizontally and vertically, because if you recall that science, this thing travels vertically.
Yeah.
Which is against everything we've ever learned in Star Wars, right? This is what's great about this movie, by the way. It's everything we've ever learned in Star Wars, which, by the way, as much as we love it, is not hard science by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah.
But the ship travels in a vertical method, and horizontal and vertical. This is the whole thing. It's like, it's when it's traveling, it's vertical, and then it stops moving, and then gravity kicks in, and then it's got to lay it down, and it's got to spin. Like, that's the whole thing. The whole thing is a complicated mess of beautiful science. Where
I didn't think about that until right now. I just remember watching the film.
Oh, well, listen, awesome. I feel good about that, because it means we've done our job, and it means that none of that Because this is what's great about this movie that I've just alluded you to,
Yeah.
which hopefully doesn't get in everyone's mind as they're watching it. But is that the hard science in it is it's hard to shoot. It's incredibly
100%.
technical
Yeah.
and very hard to shoot because a lot of the sets, like I said, were vertical or horizontal, and you know these sets were sets aren't built to just like stand up on its end. Like you've got to structure them in a way that you know, and you've also got to pre-plan the lighting and the shots so that it works vertically and horizontally. You
So
know,
did they have them on a gimbal or something?
Well, we never needed to getting into the geeky technicals of it. We never needed to see them go from one state to another.
Okay.
In the cockpit, we did. There was a little bit of a gimbal there because there was a we had some work in you know the Adrian fishing sequence it's at a certain 45 degree angle, and that things were sliding. So we needed that to be on a gimbal. But for the most part, we didn't have scenes where we needed to see it do that. And so we didn't actually have to do that. There's a scene in the med bay where I think the beds rotate, to show what, and they were practically rotating beds. You know, there's another one where he goes from weightlessness to standing up. He goes from horizontal to vertical, you know, but it wasn't really a need. So we didn't actually have to, do too many gimbals in that sense, and we just had to rebuild them vertically or rebuild them horizontally.
We're gonna run out of time in a minute, so I've got two quick ones. You've created some really, this might not be quick for you, but it's quick for me. You've created some really memorable images in cinema. Is there one shot or sequence that stands out for you that has been especially meaningful?
I mean, no, and that's the thing. Like you said, it's not quick for me because I could talk to you about sequences in every film that I've done.
Oh yeah, I could talk to you for 3 hours, mate. No worries about that.
And I could same, unfortunately. But listen, I mean, I've always said, from day one, I love the Vader sequence in Rogue.
100%.
I loved shooting it, and it was a last minute scene that was added right just before we were wrapping up the edit that we added
but
on.
Being in a cinema for a midnight screening of that film. And that sequence starting with 300 plus people, I'll never forget it.
I'm with you. The first time I saw it, I went, man, high five. But the other thing, the other sequence that I fist bumped the air, was when I first saw the sandworm sequence in June 2.
Yeah,
you know, where he's cool. He gets on the sandworm. And the thing is, we worked really hard on that, and that was a total team effort between myself and Danny Villa, my second unit cinematographer, and Tanya, who was the second unit director. Like it was a total team sequence of crew, and it was hard, man. It was really technically, it was really hard. And watching that sequence in the cinema, and I watched it sitting next to Denis, again, I fist bumped. I was like, yeah, it's like a kid, like going, man, this is awesome. Like a ride at, you know, at Dreamworld or something. It was fantastic.
Yeah, 100%. So, it's same with some of your scenes that were in like the Batman and stuff as well. Like watching that film, there's some sequences in that where you just go, yeah, that's cool.
and again, same. I mean, let's not get started because the thing is we could talk because it's fun. It's really fun. It's hard, man. And that's when the best sequences are the best, is when it's hard and tricky and you figure it out and you get through it. But that's this entire movie. This is the entire Hail Mary.
Yeah, it is.
Is that entire movie, with the exception of some of the Earth stuff, which is a bit more traditionally shot, by the way, and I think that's what's great about it. But every part of the Hail Mary is a challenge. Every part of it, technically and emotionally, and so that's why, I mean, you know, to date, I mean, it's my most proudest I've been of a film because of the fact that we worked so hard to do it. I expended so much kind of nervous energy on certain problems.
Yeah,
and when you watch it, when I watch it, I forget about all that stuff, and I'm like watching this beautiful character experiencing his mate in space, and
100%.
So
the whole movie's bloody well done, mate. Like hats off. I'm going to wrap up now, but as I said, I could talk to you for bloody hours because I love all the technical stuff. But good luck with this. Hopefully,
thank
sometime
you, my friend.
In the future, we can have another chat and an extended chat. So thanks very much,
indeed,
mate.
Indeed. Good to chat to you. See you soon.
You too, mate.